to the Alaska World Affairs Council Presents on KSKA Anchorage. I'm Kristen Spack. The Alaska World Affairs Council brings the world to Alaska. World leaders, journalists, authors, educators, and entrepreneurs join Alaskans in a conversation about world affairs. This week, Ambassador of the Czech Republic to the United States, Peter Kolar, speaks on Europe and the United States, why we need each other. Ambassador Kolar began working at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Czech Republic in 1993, where he served as director of the Department for Czechs Living Abroad and foreign policy advisor to the foreign minister. In 1996, he was appointed ambassador to Sweden, where he remained until 1998. Then he became an advisor for European integration and the Balkans for President Havel of the Czech Republic. After a little over a year as an advisor to the president, he returned to his role as ambassador, this time to the Republic of Ireland. From September 2003 to October 2005, Peter Kolar was the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs for Bilateral Relations. Today, he lives in Washington, D.C., where he serves as ambassador of the Czech Republic. On Monday, June 29th, he spoke at the Alaska World Affairs Council on Europe and the United States, why we need each other. In partnership with the Alaska World Affairs Council, KSKA presents Ambassador of the Czech Republic to the United States, Peter Kolar.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Frank, Honorary Consul General. Thank you all for coming. I first of all, would like to inform you that yesterday I had a privilege to promote our Honorary Consul, Frank Nosek, here to the position Honorary Consul General, because he was working so hard for 10 years and he was so great supporter of Czech-American relations that we simply couldn't resist to promote him. Yes. So that was the primary purpose of my trip, but I have to say that I was planning to come to the to Alaska from the beginning of my tenure. I came to the United States in the end of November 2005, and from that time we were planning to come. But you can imagine always something, especially in Washington, D.C., quite observative city, was preventing me from doing that. So finally, I could make it, and I have to tell you, I'm not sure if I will leave, because it's really fascinating. It's not only as we read in the books, the greatest state of the United States, Alaska, but I think it's probably one of the most beautiful, if not the most beautiful states. I'm sitting here watching the scenery in front of me, and my spirit is probably somewhere. So if I speak, you know, some nonsenses, please excuse me, because I really can't resist to look at it. By the way, one of my favorite quotations is from Oscar Wilde: "I can resist everything except temptation." So it's hard to resist that. Another point I want to make is that I know that speeches of the ambassadors are usually boring, but you are people who are interested in foreign affairs, so I hope that if I will be boring, you will be skillful enough to let me know. So throw some tomato or something, you know, just stop me. But because it's so boring, I believe that it would be great if I could decorate this session, which, as by the way, I learned is extraordinary, it's special. You normally are not on my meeting on Mondays, but Fridays. So thank you very much for coming for this special gathering. But I wanted to really decorate it, and I thought that the best way how to do it is to bring with me something what I personally miss is the charm and beauty. And this is Sandy Jana Pták, our Czech-American queen of beauty. And she won this award last year, and she is really extraordinary. I met her last time, actually the first time and the last time, in Portland, in Oregon, when I was there with the president. And she really attract everybody there, because she is not only beautiful, she is very intelligent. She is a student, by the way. She didn't show up when people were asked about the students. She is a student of the university in Oregon, in Portland. And she has a lovely voice. She can sing everything. Yesterday I have heard some song from Celine Dion in Czech. Would you believe it? So she is also skillful in languages. And I would say this combination of beauty, charm, discipline, self-control, but at the same time great humor and nice sense for Czech heritage, it is fascinating. And I always love to meet people who are proud Americans, who were born here, who became very dedicated citizens of this beautiful country, of the United States, but at the same time, they know something about their heritage and who are proud of it. So thank you, Sandy, for being here and decorating that. I would need to thank your parents, because without them, I see your mom here, without them you would be not the queen of the Czech-American community, but also you will be probably not the student and so successful young lady. Good luck to you, and thanks for coming. This national costume, as we call it, kroj, it's something what Czechs, if they really want to see it, need to come to the United States today. Some of them are really well preserved here, so that's great. Now I think that I should speak a bit about, you know, the topic of the lecture should be why Europeans and Americans need each other, why we should cooperate as much as possible. But before I start to speak about that, I think that I should explain what's the Czech position on that. Because not all Europeans are the same. And you know it here in the United States. Here in Alaska, there are a lot of people with the German ancestry and Norwegian ancestry, Irish ancestry. So those people with the different roots would probably approve what I'm saying, that we in Europe have a different views about many issues, and it's because of the historical experience and because of different geopolitical situation. And I could continue speaking about reasons why it's that. So why Czechs are very dedicated transatlantic people? Why they believe that we, Europeans and Americans, need to work together? It's really because of our location, just in the center of Europe. If you look where at the map of Europe, you'll see that Czech Republic is really the heart of it, surrounded by Germany from the west, Austria from the south, then Slovakia on our eastern border, and Poland on the northern part of it, but not far away from Russia. And I think that this speaks about something, and it speaks for itself. The relatively small nation in the heart of Europe, where the superpowers were trying always to dominate, had to look for the best allies. And it's proved by history that our best allies in the recent history, was the United States. It was always better for us to have a United States on our side than to be on the other side of the barricade. Speaking about our history, let me do really short excursion to that. Because you need to know why the mentality of Czechs is sometimes for some foreigners, for some strangers, like, the Germans, some of them, the Nazi Germans, were calling us laughing monsters. Because, you know, the sense of humor is the way how we could survive even the biggest oppressions. But it is something what we didn't have for forever. We had to learn it through centuries. As we were occupied by many different powers, we had to learn that if we want to survive as a nation, we need to have our intelligentsia, we need to have our education, we need to have our language, and we need to have our sense of humor. The Czech Kingdom was quite powerful and independent in medieval times. But then in times where Catholics and Protestants were fighting in Europe, our Protestants lost. And the recatholization of the country meant that a lot of things were pushed back. It happened in 1618, a so-called battle on the White Hill, where the Czech and Moravian troops lost against the Austrians, the Catholics. Actually, it was not so much nationalized. You know, it was the Protestants against the Catholics. But in our case, it was the Czechs and Moravians against the Habsburg Austrian Catholics. Some bad rumors and really not serious gossips are saying that our troops lost because Czechs escaped, and they escaped because they realized that their Moravian comrades are too drunk that they couldn't fight. But they are just the bad rumors. But as a consequence of that, we lost our independence for 300 years, and the Czech Kingdom became the part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. We almost lost our language. It's something what happened to Irish people. But then in the national uprising in the 19th century, in the early 19th century, as the wave of Romanticism came to Europe and people started to realize that they are not Germans or they are not whatever, you know, they just were looking for their real roots, historical roots, ethnic roots, Czechs realized that they are... They should be proud of themselves, they should be proud of their history, and they established their own intelligentsia. They were establishing their own universities, their own businesses, and they became quite a powerful part of this group of nations in Austro-Hungarian Empire. Then when we regained our independence in 1918, as a result of the end of the First World War, our Republic, at that time we call it just Czechoslovakia because we created the state with Slovaks and some Rusins, the part of the country which is today the part of Ukraine. That was the Republic, later on called First Republic. And it was based on principles of equality and freedom and democracy. Actually, our first constitution was very much inspired, I would say it's almost the copy of the Constitution of the United States. And our first president, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, gained the support for our country, for the independence of our country, here in the United States. France and Britain, they were not very, you know, eager to support it. But President Wilson, Woodrow Wilson, was a keen ally for our independence struggle. So we got our state, our republic, Czechoslovakia, in 1918. And it became really very prosperous and seriously democratic country with the very serious approach to the equality of ethnics and nationalities. So later on in the 30s, it became kind of the last island of real democracy in Europe, surrounded by different... various authoritarian or totalitarian regimes. Nazis in Germany, then after the assassination of Dollfuss, even the Nazi rule in Austria, Horthy's Hungary, Pilsudski's Poland, and then, of course, Soviet Russia with Stalin there. So a lot of people escaped from surrounding countries to Czechoslovakia, Democrats and Jews and people who were punished at home, they escape and they live there. Unfortunately, in 1938, we learned the lesson, which was really one of the most frustrating lessons we only could learn, every nation could learn. It was a lesson about the betrayal. We had our allies, France and Britain, and we had treaties signed with them that we will fight together against the invasion, possible invasion from outside. But when Mussolini from fascist Italy and Hitler from Nazi Germany pushed those two allies of Czechoslovakia, they signed a treaty and they appeased us. You know, from that time, the appeasement is something what's really what resonates in the ears of Czechs. So the so-called Munich Treaty was signed in 1938, and the part of the country was broken from the Czechoslovakia, and then a few months later, the Nazi German troops came and occupied the rest of the country, and we became just a protectorate of Nazi Germany. Of course, when we were liberated in 1945 from the east by the Red Army and from the west by the U.S. troops, we believed that the Nazism is over and we will have democracy again. We had it only 3 years, and that then communist coup d'etat in 1948, inspired by Russian, Soviet advisors who were at that time in the Prague, in Prague already in the Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia, working with our communists, we became 40 years communist country. There was an attempt to at least soften this regime in 1968, so-called Prague Spring, when our socialists tried to, or the communists tried to build the so-called socialism with the human face. But big brothers in Moscow didn't like that. So one day we waked up and we had a Soviet tanks on our streets and we were occupied again. At that time, a lot of people believed that the United States could come and help us. But of course, it was impossible. In that times of Cold War, you know, every move like that would probably cause serious disaster. So we became, again, normalized, let's say normalized. Communists call it normalization. So we were normalized. It means that everybody who wanted to express some free idea or to say something freely was punished. That was the way of normalization they liked. But then finally in 1989, we had something what you maybe noticed, and it's called Velvet Revolution. It was a collapse of communism in Europe and in our country as well, and we have managed to do it in a very smooth way. So the fact that we had then restoration of democracy without the blood on the streets was something what I personally perceive and see as a great achievement. Later on, 3 years, or 2 years later, after this Velvet Revolution, we decided that it's better to split up with the Slovaks. So Czechoslovakia finished its existence, and Czechs and Slovaks peacefully divorced. We have a best relations with them, really, until today. A lot of families are mixed, and we sometimes have to explain in Brussels, in headquarters of European Union, why we divorced. If we like each other so much, Czech and Slovak, so must be something, you know, tricky behind that. And some people discovered that we did it by reason, because we wanted to be two members of European Union, not only one, you know, just to have more stars on the flag or something. So we are now really with Slovaks in the best possible relationship. Sometime I think once, even in the family, once the couple, husband and his wife, starts to argue about money, who is paying more to the family budget, it's better to say, well, separate, and then become friends again. We did it. We unfortunately had this problem with arguing who is paying more for the federal budget, and in the right time, we separated. At that time, I was absolutely upset. I was really furious. I and many of my friends were saying, why we do it? Nobody asked us. This is just decision made by politicians. We should say our word to that. But today, I can say it was probably a wise decision because it's really good, and we have those two seats in European Union together with Slovaks. Yes, and where we are today, you know, we, in the year where we celebrate this 20th anniversary of the Velvet Revolution, we are normal, not normalized, but normal European country with prosperous, relatively prosperous economy despite the economic crisis everywhere. We have the system based on rule of law. We have democratically elected representatives. We have some governments coming and leaving, and people just take it as something what's normal in democracy. only if the opposition fires the government during the EU presidency. They don't like it. It is just what happened this year. But I think it's lovely to see that we can today say, yes, we are normal democratic country with normal troubles as other democratic countries have. But of course, at the same time, we have our historical experience. We remember something from the history. And that's why we believe that transatlantic relations is the most instrumental, the most important, the most essential part of our foreign policy. We love to be members of European Union, but we first of all love to be members of NATO. We love to build Europe together with other European countries, but we believe that European presence in Europe is still needed. I'm sure that for many European, for many American families, it's not, well, the great thing to send their boys and girls somewhere overseas. I have to say that I can imagine, if I'm the father of two boys, if they need to go somewhere abroad, I'll be not happiest on this earth. But, well, the fact that you have your troops in Kosovo, by the way, your governor just visited them, and she's coming back today, or she came yesterday, if I'm correct, because we are just scheduling our meeting. I'm not sure how is it with her in the moment. But the fact that you have your troops in Kosovo is great. I think that what we Europeans sometimes forget is that we are, you know, very innovative and creative in discovering and creating things like bloody religious wars or ethnic cleansing, fascisms, Nazisms, communisms, gulags, guillotines, all those things. And then once we are in the trouble, we usually call, please, guys from overseas, could you come and help? And you finally always did. So thank you very much, by the way. Thanks for that. I think that this is what Europeans should remember. They shouldn't take it so easily, like something what's granted forever. And as I'm saying, Americans should not take Europeans and their support as granted forever. We are two branches of one tree. Our values, our principles, our way of life. Maybe there are some slight differences sometime, but we are two branches of one tree. We are, as I'm saying, sentenced to cooperate. It's our destiny. Once we don't do it, Europeans and Americans, we could be terribly surprised what could happen to our civilizations, to our value, and to our values, to our principles. Despite some arguing sometime about ways how to do things, we need to know that our goal is the same. It's to have this planet safe, prosperous, nice place where we can breathe clean air, we can live without wars, we can live in prosperity, and we don't need to be afraid about the future of our kids. I think that once you look what's happening now in this international scene, if you see, for example, what's happening in Iran and what are the reactions from some other countries, you will realize that Europeans and Americans have the same view. Sometime we need to really strategize more. We need to be maybe more intensive in our tacticizing. Division of labor is important as well. Sometimes Europeans can do more. Sometimes Americans can do more. I understand if your president is very cautious in his expressions how to command the situation in Iran. I understand in the whole context of the problems there in the Middle East. Whatever the American president would say would be definitely abused and used against you and against us. So it must be serious strategizing. But once we see what, for example, other countries which are not in our transatlantic space are saying about that, sometime I'm really surprised, because it seems to me that we have totally different views, we have a different approaches, we have different perceptions. If I'm serious about abusement of power in Iran, and I'm saying that this is not what should happen in civilized country, that people who are protesting on the streets should be punished, beaten, and killed, I would expect that even countries like some of those who are on the eastern part of our borders or in Asia, big powers, rising powers, as some people call them, emerging powers, would see it in the same way. But they say, well, regular elections, fine, okay, congratulations, Mr. Ahmadinejad. So is that the same world, the same planet where we live together with them, or is that different? Probably different. And we need to do our best, Americans and Europeans, I mean those who are in European Union and in NATO, and Canadians, of course, speaking about our transatlantic partnership. We shouldn't forget our partners and allies from Canada. We need to really do it, take it seriously, and do our best to help people who are still suffering on this planet, and to help those who want to have a better life, but of course at the same time not try to impose our civilization from above on them. And it's a delicate issue. It's very hard how to help somebody who deserves your help, and you know it. At the same time, the background, the history, the culture of those people is different. So once you try to liberate some Muslim woman by taking her burqa out of her face, you can terribly insult her. So, you know, I'm just using this example to say how sometimes these differences in viewing some things are serious, and we need to take them really seriously. Speaking about our cooperation, transatlantic cooperation, as a representative of the Czech Republic, I shouldn't forget to mention one point here, and this is the missile defense. I am sure that you noticed that the Czech Republic was approached by the previous administration here from the United States to negotiate about missile defense radar location in our country, on our soil. And that we finally, after 1.5 years of negotiations, tough negotiations, as tough as among friends it could be, and allies it could be, we achieved very serious and very good treaties. Now we are in the situation where the new administration is reviewing that, and we have in our country also this ratification process stopped for a while. It must be ratified in the Czech Republic by both chambers of our parliament and signed by the president. It was so far ratified only or approved only by the Senate, and it was withdrawn from the House by the government because of the fragile political situation, and are waiting after, we will probably come back to that after elections, which are in October. But everybody there would tell you, yes, we wait for the clear signal from the United States, if they want to continue or not. I would love to say that we are ready. I can't do it now because of the political situation at home, which is a bit uncertain. After elections, it will be more clear. But I would say that if the United States decide to move forward, I believe that we will do the same. And just personal remark, I personally supported this project very much because I believed it's definitely better and more human to have deterrent like that, to have defensive system like that, than to have offensive instruments to strike back only if we are attacked. This system is really to deter first, because a lot of those crazy maniacs living somewhere in the mountains of Middle East are crazy enough, but you know, they still have some selfish approach, so they wouldn't do something what they would understand that would be useless. And in case they really attack us, it's better to kill the missile than to kill innocent people in those countries where those crazy maniacs live. And this is what we can do so far. Now we have only possibility to strike back. If we build this missile defense shield together, Americans and Europeans, radar in the Czech Republic, interceptors in Poland, we can afterwards say, yes, we did something for our future, for our kids, and in case we are attacked, we can have our conscience clean, because we will not kill innocent people. We will just shoot down those missiles flying to our cities and intend to kill our people. So that's why I was supporting that. In this moment, I think that I am speaking maybe too long, and I would prefer to have questions from you. I didn't speak very much about the Czech presidency in the European Union, because now it's my, actually tomorrow is my last day. I only informed my Swedish colleague, who is taking over from me and the presidency, that he should be cautious, because in the midnight in Washington, once he will be pronounced as a president of European Union, I'll be still the European president for 4 hours. So he must be cautious. There'll be two kings. But we can speak about our presidency if you are interested. We had a lot of things to do, and I believe that we did, despite the fact that our government got a vote of no confidence, then we still managed, accomplished a lot of issues we had to. But we can speak about it later on, or just now, as you wish. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Peter Kolar, Ambassador of the Czech Republic to the United States, recorded in Anchorage on Monday, June 29th. Following his talk entitled Europe and the United States, Why We Need Each Other, Ambassador Kolar responded to questions from the audience. First, he was asked, can you please discuss the issues facing the Czech Republic electorate? What choices will they be making before the election?
You mean in the Czech Republic now, before the elections? Yeah. Actually, we had run elections recently. There was the election to the European Parliament, and the result of that election was quite clear. But you can take it as something what is a clear indicator for normal general elections for your own parliament. Because for European elections, the turnouts are not so high as it should be. People still don't accept the fact that European Parliament is the important body, and in case we approve the Lisbon Treaty, which is kind of the constitution now in the pipeline waiting for ratification from Germany, Poland, Czech Republic and Ireland, but the Irish case is the most important because they need to repeat their referendum. They had one and they said no to this Lisbon Treaty, so they want to repeat it. It's nothing new. I had a privilege to be ambassador to the Republic of Ireland. I just want to, because you said Kingdom, Republic of Ireland, in time when they refused Nice Treaty, and they repeated the referendum after 1 year, and they said yes in the second attempt. So I think that we will probably have this Lisbon Treaty ratified sooner than later, maybe during the Swedish presidency of European Union. And then European Parliament would be even more important than it is today. So unfortunately, people didn't realize the importance of that, and the turnout was really quite small. We had 28% in our country turnout. In Slovakia, only 15%, if I'm correct. So still, people need to realize the importance. But I'm saying that what is important to see that we have, after 20 years of restored democracy, we have new electorate there. People who are now about 20 years old, those who were born in the democratic system, those who are not ashamed to express their views. Those who are brave enough to even demonstrate on the streets if they don't like something. And they were throwing eggs this year against the politicians from the party, which the generation of those young people blamed for this awkward situation, the vote of no confidence for our government during the EU presidency. So I think that there is something new, some new phenomenon. I believe that people in another quite interesting moment, people in time of crisis, I would instinctively say would vote for the leftists. But it's not like that. Even in other EU countries, it didn't happen. So people are probably better educated today than they used to be some decades ago, and they believe that there must be some solutions, not promises only. Not just, you know, nice promises are not enough for them. Still, of course, there are a lot of people who believe that, well, we need to be more supporters, and we need more benefits, and we need more security and insurance. But we in European Union, we have really a lot of it already now. And if you try to touch upon some of those benefits, for example, in my country, if you try to ask people to pay 30 crowns once they visit the doctor, 30 crowns is $1.50. And if you ask them to do that, they are ready to demonstrate. They don't want to pay 30 crowns, $1.50, to visit a doctor. Why they should? They used to have free of charge all time. Or if you ask them to pay for schools of their children, I mean not the elementary schools or the secondary schools, by the universities, they don't want to. They wouldn't pay. It is totally different. You know, as I'm speaking about those two branches of our one tree, there are some significant differences. I would expect instinctively that leftist, the parties like the socialist parties and social democratic parties would profit from the crisis. And they are not profiting so significantly as I would expect. So we will see. I believe that in the elections now in October, there could be some surprise. It could be finally the center-right parties who would gain from that crisis and who would win. Because they are trying seriously to offer some solutions. And they are not so populistic.
Since the recent protests in Iran, both Alaska senators have supported the move to amend the Iran Sanctions Act, which would expand economic sanctions against Iran. An audience member asked the ambassador, "Can you give us some insight on the Czech Republic's stance on sanctions in general and how that might be different from your European partners?"
Well, speaking about Iran, then I need to emphasize that European partners are not actually so soft or so bad as in some other cases. We were arguing very much with some European partners about, you know, support of Israel, where we were regarded as too pro-Israeli, or, you know, support of the Cuban dissidents. We couldn't find a way with our allies from Spain how to actually cooperate on that, because they had a very different views. The goal was always the same, to have a success in the end, and to have, for example, in case of Cuba, free Cuba. But how to do it? You know, what ways we should use? What strategies we should use? In Iran issue, we are quite united. Even France and even Germany are pretty tough. You know, Britain is the most visible because they really punished the British diplomats very much. By the way, they punished our diplomat as well. Because we had the presidency in the European Union, and they don't like us quite a long time, because we have Radio Farda in Prague, broadcasting from Prague to Iran. Radio Farda is kind of, you know, what's the Radio Free Europe, or yeah. So this is the broadcasting in Persian language from Prague to Iran. as we had it from Munich, when we were not part of the free world. Now they are broadcasting from Prague to from our capital city to Iran. And this Radio Farda is really like, you know, just, I don't want to say something improper, but if you sit on something very hot, you know, for Iranian nomenclatura. So we Europeans, I think we, of course, can see some reference like the Czech Republic and Great Britain in the front line, but we are supported by France and Germany. President Sarkozy, there are not very many moments where I would say thank you very much, Mr. President, but in this case, I really say yes. He is clear and tougher maybe than some people would expect. It's maybe because of the situation in France, where, as you maybe follow up this debate about burqas and religious symbols in their schools, they have to take it seriously and they are supportive. So I think that once we agreed upon some sanctions, I believe that now we need to wait a bit for the United States, what you would do here, because we are probably tougher in this case.
There was recently an article in the New York Times about the Czech government sending Vietnamese workers back home as a result of increased unemployment, which many viewed as discrimination. The audience member citing the article asked the ambassador to explain why Vietnamese workers are being told to leave the Czech Republic. Secondly, she asked him to explain how the Czech Republic has been affected by the global financial crisis.
Thanks. I will start with the second part of that. This international financial crisis, of course, has an impact on us. Financial part of that, not so much, because our banks are quite stable. We learned something from our mistakes we did in 96, 97. We had our recession at that time, and bankers learned something quite simple, that they should provide the loans to those who are able to pay them back. Well, this conservative approach proved to be good. So I think that we don't have real problems. Well, the fact is that some Czech banks now are part of the big corporations, the international corporations, banking corporations, and of course, if the banks somewhere in other parts of Europe is sick, and it has a good daughter in the Czech Republic, which is profitable, sometimes they are pumping money from that part to the other bank offices. But this is something what we can't influence, and so far we don't suffer so much with the financial crisis. Our currency is stable. I am suffering because I'm paid in dollars, and the Czech crown is stronger and stronger and stronger, and I need to pay, you know, another part of reconstruction of my house in southern Bohemia, and I need to send some dollars home, and I have to really confess that I'm every day watching and the curse and parity, and I don't like it. So... well, it is. This is the monetary, the financial part of the crisis. Then, of course, the economic crisis as such affect us more. Unemployment is almost now 8% because we have a lot of industry in the country. We were always the most industrial part of this region, since European region, and we are very much dependent on export. And we are doing a lot of cars in the country, not only traditional Czech cars, which are now part of the Volkswagen Group, but there are some investors from Southeast Asia, from Korea, who are building the cars there. And we had a lot of other businesses related to that. So if there is a falling demand for cars, of course we must be affected. But fortunately enough, we have also another branches of the industry like pharmaceuticals, chemical products, a lot of IT and high tech. So it's not so bad as in some other countries. But we can't separate ourselves from this global economy. So it will be unfair, not serious to say that we are not suffering. We are. And people used to have a good life. And suddenly they realize that this is not granted, it's not forever. And they are looking for somebody who is guilty. So back to question about the politics. It could, of course, we have still 3 months before the elections would happen, and it could affect the situation even politically, this crisis. But seriously, I don't think that it is really so bad. It could be worse. We are not growing. Now there is a drop in GDP. It's about 2%. So it's the recession, obviously. But still not so bad as in other countries. The second question about the Vietnamese, because they are mostly Vietnamese, some Mongols as well, but mostly Vietnamese. Of course, it's unfair. You know, in times when we were looking for some labor force from abroad, we were, you know, inviting them to come almost, because we couldn't satisfy our booming industry. So we had a lot of Ukrainians, a lot of people from Balkans, but those Asian people are very hardworking and they are very disciplined, and actually employers like them. Now we are in the recession, jobs are disappearing, so what to do with them? In fact, not everyone from Southeast Asia who was living in our country was working as an employee. A lot of them were selling some products, as you have mentioned, at the borders with Germany. And we have a problem. We have a problem here in the United States because they were selling a lot of faked products, like those DVDs and CDs and recordings. And our police was not skillful enough to prevent them from doing that. They were like like flies. Once we jump on them in one place, they disappeared and they were immediately in some other place. You know that just. And selling what, even if you manage to take everything of their production or their goods, they had, you know, tons of it somewhere, you know, hidden. So and even faked cigarettes, everything was faked. So we are still negotiating with the United States because we don't want to be on the watch list of the country which is not serious about the respecting the law, the authorization law. That it was quite hard. You know, they were very skillful, I have to say. Now, in times where we need to protect jobs for our people, they were offered to go home, and the government is paying them for that return. So those who decided to go home, they got a free ticket, and I don't know, not much, but about 500 euros to their pocket. It's nothing, but it's better than to be expelled. Not everyone of them have a legal status. And this is also quite a symptomatic feature of this community. Once you allow one or two of them to come, suddenly this is like a magnet. You know, there are some relatives and people who are visiting them and staying. I don't know how they get to the country, but we had a lot of them there. But I'm not saying it's wrong. They were very hardworking, usually quite disciplined. Of course, they had some problems inside of their community, but there was no racism toward them. We have problems with skinheads, those neo-Nazis marching in Europe on their streets. Not so much in our country, but they are there, definitely. And in time of crisis, it's always one of the big risks we need to take seriously. But they were not focusing for Asians so much. Their primary target were gypsies and people who are living there for centuries. But they are still not respected by a majority of people, like part of the society. And it's sad. It is pity. So maybe that's why some of them are looking for their new home in Canada. I'm sorry about that. But.
Last, an audience member asked, did the Czech Republic send any troops to Afghanistan or Iraq?
Yes, we had our troops in Iraq. Our president was one of those aides who signed the letter supporting President Bush, and we were very much criticized by that. We, for example, learned from the former president of France, Mr. Chirac, that we missed opportunity to shut up, and we are very sensitive about this style of lecturing us. We had it 40 years from Moscow, so he really didn't achieve what he probably wanted. So then we sent even more troops then to Iraq. We had them there. We had in Basra under British command, one unit, and then we had military police in Iraq and in Jordan as well, who were training the military people from Iraq, law enforcement people and military people. We were training Iraqi diplomats at home and Iraqi judges, mostly constitutional judges in Prague. We have our troops in Afghanistan, and we have them constantly. Now we have even PRT in under our own command in Afghanistan. We have our rangers there, but we have also supportive teams in the airports and so on. Now it's about, it was almost 600, now it's 550 soldiers. You need to know that we are not so big country. We can afford to have so many troops abroad. We are 10 million people. So it's like Chicago or something, you know. I would like to emphasize that we have also our troops in Kosovo. It's about 600 again, and we had some of them in Bosnia as well. And as I'm saying, you know, it's not easy to every year to have budget approved by the parliament because they are saying why we are in so many places. We should focus for something. So now we are trying to have this these two priorities, Western Balkans and Afghanistan.
This concludes Alaska World Affairs Council Presents Peter Kolar, Ambassador of the Czech Republic to the United States. He responded to questions from the audience following his talk on Europe and the United States, Why We Need Each Other, recorded in Anchorage on Monday, June 29th, 2009. These broadcasts are produced by KSKA Public Radio in partnership with the Alaska World Affairs Council. Visit kska.org to sign up for free podcasts of Alaska World Affairs Council Presents. You can also sign up for email updates about the show and share your comments with us and other listeners online at kska.org. This has been a presentation of KSKA in partnership with the Alaska World Affairs Council. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.